We take a look at some of the big stories in national politics this week. Attorney General William Barr has been testifying in front of lawmakers about his handling of the Mueller report. Homeland Security Secretary Kristen Nielsen's departure adds to the list of departments being led by acting cabinet members. And some 2020 presidential candidates are weighing in on the prospect of expanding the number of justices on the U.S. Supreme Court. Our question for you this week, would you support that idea, expanding the court in the future? Do you think it would do anything to make partisan battles over the court less intense or less common? Should it be left as it is with the magic number 9? And does it matter to you what a presidential candidate has to say about the idea? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Ginger Gibson is a correspondent for Reuters. Ginger, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me back.
Well, let's start with Attorney General Barr today. He reopened questions about the origins of the Mueller probe and whether FBI surveillance of Trump campaign members was legal. Here he is answering a question from Democratic Senator Jeanne Shaheen about whether he thinks the FBI spied on the Trump campaign.
I don't. I guess you could. I think there's a spying did occur. Yes, I think spying did occur.
Well, let me.
But the question is whether it was predicated, adequately predicated. And I'm not suggesting it wasn't adequately predicated, but I'd need to explore that.
So this is something that President Trump has maintained happened for a long time. Did this add something new to the conversation, Ginger?
It did. I think a lot of people sort of did a double take or a double listen when they heard that today, hearing the attorney general say that the government spied on a presidential candidate, using the word spy, I think is pretty evocative of a lot of people's attention. So did bring something new. President Trump, as you may recall, accused the Obama administration, in fact, President Obama himself, of having wiretapped Trump Tower. So this has been an ongoing sort of conversation. And we do know that the government, the FBI, did obtain warrants to listen to some Trump advisors who they were concerned had been compromised by foreign influences. So we knew that already, but using the word spying, particularly by the Attorney General, I think it's kind of a very attention-grabbing phrase today from Barr.
Another big question, as Barr testifies before a couple different congressional committees, actually, is when will Congress see the Mueller report, and what will they see exactly? What has the Attorney General indicated about when and how redacted this will be?
You're right, he has been in front of several committees. We have to sort of also note that he's there to talk about the Department of Justice's budget, which is not the Mueller report, but he's fielded quite a number of questions on the Mueller report. He has said that they will not, he doesn't intend to give Congress an unredacted report, saying yesterday, I don't intend at this stage to send the full unredacted report to the committee in response to a question. He has sort of gone a little about how much he could give and who could give it. He also sort of suggested that if the chairs of the Senate and House Judiciary Committee wanted to see the full report, he would be open to discussing with just those two the ability to read it. In the past, we know that some information that members of Congress have wanted, instead of being able to get a copy or to let their staff read it, the chairman or the chairwoman of a particular committee are allowed to maybe see that classified information. So he sort of allowed that as a possibility. But it seems to be, he's sticking to his earlier points, that Congress as a whole, or even just members of some of the key committees, will not be able to see a full unredacted report, which is a demand that those committees have been making.
Now, we'd heard reporting, and this is at second hand, but that the Mueller team wasn't happy with the Attorney General's four-page summary of the report, and that they had written summaries of their own that, didn't include any classified information or secret grand jury testimony. And they're wondering why that summary, again, if it exists, wasn't released. Is that a question that's been coming up for the Attorney General before Congress?
Yeah, you know, we've seen members of Congress asking about why they can't get access to those pieces, especially in the wake of reporting that Mueller and his team aware that not everything maybe should or could become public, that there would be classified information, that there would be sort of methods, the way that they obtain that information is often not included in that grand jury testimony is secret, that they prepared sort of paragraphs or pages of information that could be released, and that the Attorney General has opted not to do so. To be clear, Attorney General Barr had been very clear even during before he was the Attorney General during his confirmation proceedings that he intended to write his own report to Congress. He was not going to turn over the report. But those are the kind of things that sort of raise a specter of what is in the version that Mueller and his team put together that they intended for public dissemination or at least congressional dissemination that is not in the information that, that Barr has released. That's the kind of thing that reporters start wondering if someone wants to hand it over without, you know, any names attached that we could get a copy since they did prepare something like that that they thought was fine for public consumption.
Talking to Ginger Gibson from Reuters, looking at some of the week's top news in national politics. Ginger, Homeland Security Secretary Kristen Nielsen resigned on Sunday, and that makes it, we've talked about that some already, but that makes her position the latest with an interim or acting secretary. Now, on my list here, I'm seeing acting heads of Defense, Interior, Office of Management, Budget, Small Business Administration, UN Ambassador, and Chief of Staff. This is kind of unusual, right?
It's very unusual. The president has sort of ended up in a universe where many of his top chiefs in his cabinet are not confirmed by the Senate. He suggested earlier this year that it gave him more flexibility to have acting, but that's why the government has a system set up where the Senate approves people so that presidents can't just put whoever they want in. There is this advising consent where they have to go to the Senate. So there's a good deal of criticism for that, but you're right. He's got this growing number of acting secretaries. There is some question about whether or not it's the Senate that's just taking too long, but they are controlled by Republicans. They need very little Democratic support to move these people. It's just become an arduous process and a controversial process, which slows everything down. When you've got so much controversy in your administration, every one of these hearings and every one of these processes can become quite fraught.
We're seeing more people now leaving their posts in Homeland Security. This just adds to the perception and reality of a lot of turnover in the Trump administration at top levels and at kind of that secondary level. Is there any sign of this settling down anytime soon?
There is not yet a sign of this settling down. We have been watching this unfold for a long time. We know that last year, in the late summer and early fall, ahead of the midterm elections, Republicans in Congress were really pressing the president to slow down on the turnover, that he needed to keep his staff, because all of the turnover, they thought, created this feeling of chaos and instability, and they were worried that voters were going to take that instability and vote against Republicans. Then there was, after the election was over, sort of again a big swing of turnover. So we're seeing that continue now. It's yet to be seen if maybe when we get a little closer to 2020, some of the president's allies prevail upon him again to sort of dial back that turnover rate, to try to keep people in jobs, to just create a sense that there is stability in this administration ahead of his reelection. That may be hard, particularly because the president thinks that when he is firing people or getting rid of people or sort of running people out of his administration, that his voters see that as clearing out the swamp or clearing out the mess and respond positively. So might be something he likes going forward.
We continue our conversation with Ginger Gibson, correspondent at Reuters, looking at some of the week's news in national politics. Ginger, we mentioned this idea. Some Democratic presidential candidates warmed to this idea of increasing the size of the U.S. Supreme Court. What's going on?
That's right. There has been, we have to sort of go back in time and remember sort of the fight we've been having as a country over the Supreme Court for about the last 3 years. You might remember Antonin Scalia dies right before the 2016 election. Republicans campaign heavily on electing President Trump in order to install conservatives. But in the meanwhile, President Obama nominated Merrick Garland to the court, and Republicans in the Senate refused to give him even a hearing in the Senate, and therefore he never got confirmed. President Trump wins. He then nominates Gorsuch, who is seated, and then fast forward, and Kennedy retires, and we have Brett Kavanaugh. So now there are some liberal activists, a handful of them, who say the Constitution doesn't say how many Supreme Court justices there should be. There are 9, but maybe there should be 11 or 13 or 15 or however many we want. And that if a Democrat were to be elected president, instead of waiting for maybe a conservative or a Democrat to leave the conservative or a liberal to leave the court, they should just be replaced. They should not be replaced. They should add extra justices to the court. Now, President Trump has said he's not going to do that, going the other way and add some extra conservatives. And we have seen even some Democrats pushing back against this idea. Bernie Sanders was asked about it last week in a forum, and he said he didn't think that was a good idea. If you add 2 liberal justices, once a Democrat gets elected, that the next time a Republican gets elected, they might just add 2 more. He thought that that was maybe not the right idea. But there has been some reception. We've seen some Democratic candidates say they would be open to considering proposals, that they would welcome ideas. We saw South Bend Mayor Pete Buttigieg say that he would be open to some proposals, although he thinks that maybe you could expand the court to, say, 15, but institute some requirements where you had to have near equal numbers of conservatives and liberal justices. So this is something that Democrats are signaling in some cases some openness to. But it's also, and I think this is part of the fascinating nature of elections, it's something Republicans want to talk about. They saw in 2016 that the court was an issue that really galvanized their voters and turned people out, and sort of telling your voters, like, be afraid if a Democrat gets elected, you may lose this court, which you felt was so important to hold on to, that they may encourage some people that might have otherwise felt not so excited about voting for Donald Trump more inclined to show up and vote for him.
Let's bring on a caller on this now. Sue is with us in Fish Creek. Sue, hi.
Hi, how are you? There was an idea put forth on NPR months ago that I thought was brilliant, and I can't remember the gentleman who presented it, but he said, suggested that they go to 18-year term limits, and every third year, one of the Supreme Court would be going off. I'm not sure how it actually gets started, but this is where I remember it. Every 3 years, a Supreme Court justice would be going off, and whoever's in presidency at that time would be the person that puts people forth, and therefore it would kind of over time level out that whole field. You wouldn't have to have more places. Foreign service, more places mean people that have pensions, that are, there's more salary there, and the other way just makes sense.
Sue, thanks for the call. And we hear, and I've talked to people who advocated for roughly that plan on the show in the past, Ginger, is the idea of some kind of reform to lifetime appointments something that people are buzzing about in Washington at all?
It's not quite a buzz status, but there is a growing openness to it. We heard last week Senator Elizabeth Warren in a forum also asked about this, indicated that she might be willing to, as well Bernie Sanders, support a proposal that would rotate judges, where they would go from the Supreme Court to the appeals court, so it wasn't these individual one justice for a lifetime on the court. Term limits is another one, maybe adding people who have been on the court but shouldn't have to be there for their whole lives. They're able to sort of dictate policy for decades or dictate legal policy for decades. So that is another proposal. I think that we're a long way away from this. We have to remember this has only been suggested once. It didn't get anywhere in Congress. Washington is very reluctant to break from longstanding tradition. It would be a real hard fight to get any of this changed, even something like term limits or rotating judges or any type of qualifier separate from what we already have.
Thanks for that call, Sue. We're talking to Ginger Gibson from Reuters about some of the week's top stories in national politics. Turning to another congressional oversight issue, Ginger, Congress and the president's tax returns, Democrats in the House trying to get them. White House Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney was asked on Fox News this week about the possibility of the returns being released. Here's a listen.
You believe Democrats will never see the president's tax returns?
Oh, no, never. Nor should they. Keep in mind that that's an issue that was already litigated during the election. Voters knew the president could have given his tax returns. They knew that he didn't, and they elected him anyway.
That's not exactly litigated, of course. That's a legal term. And President Trump has been saying he couldn't release his returns because he was under audit. That's not true. But members of Congress say, hey, we have a law on our side. We can requisition these tax returns from the Treasury Department, and they're supposed to give them to us. What's the status of that back and forth?
So right now, they have not successfully obtained them, and it's a long way before they are likely to be able to do so. But they're going to keep trying. This has been a real rallying cry for Democrats. They think that the president should make public his tax returns. And we have to remember, he broke with decades of precedent of previous presidential candidates and presidents who have released these documents for public inspection. You're right. They point to a law that says that the House Ways and Means Committee can just ask for anyone's. They could ask for mine. They could ask for yours if they were doing some type of investigation, and that they are entitled to see the president's. This will be a legal battle. President Trump is also happy to be having this fight with Democrats. He thinks his base is galvanized when he's fighting with Democrats. He thinks that when he is viewed as being unfairly under attack, that his voters are sympathetic and that they will be more inclined to work harder for him to get reelected. I can't say one way or another whether we ever get them, but I can promise you that we're going to be talking about this fight for a good time now in the future.
We're on a caller. Ann is with us in Green Bay. Ann, hello.
Hello. Well, I think he should have to release his income tax forms or his last several years because I don't know if it was the guest on your show, whoever just made that comment about he was elected because even though he didn't show his tax returns well, the point of the matter is he was not elected by the popular vote. So people seem to keep forgetting that. But yes, he should bring his forms forward.
And thanks for the call. And one argument Democrats are making, Ginger, is people need to know if the president has foreign-related investments that could influence him on issues.
That's right. That's one of the arguments that gets used to say that he should be releasing these documents. The other is whether he's profiting from his time in the White House. The president is prohibited by the Constitution for receiving anything of value for doing his job. And for that reason, there is a concern among his critics or vocalized, they say they're concerned, that he's making some money off of the White House out of his role as president. And they think that his tax returns would make clear whether or not that was happening.
And finally, Ginger, the House decided not to vote yesterday on a budget measure involving spending caps after Speaker Nancy Pelosi got pushback from a couple places within her caucus. Where was the resistance coming from?
You know, this is like everything changes and then everything stays the same. We are watching Democrats have fights over the budget, and she was getting it from both sides of her caucus, both progressives and moderates, who felt that their voices had been left out of the budgetary process. It's important to remember that budgets, congressional budgets, don't carry a lot of weight. They don't have the force of law. They aren't bound by them. They're really messaging documents. They're just a list of priorities. Budgets are not particularly followed at a federal level. It is another process called the appropriations process. So this is just a list of ideas, and they felt like their ideas hadn't been included, and they wanted new, different ideas. So pulled that vote for that reason.
Somewhere, I got to think John Boehner is smiling to himself because he ran into this, and then Paul Ryan, as Republican speakers of the House, where two different factions within their own party would shoot down legislation they were working toward. And now it's the Democrats' turn.
Absolutely. I think probably John Boehner is getting a little kick out of this since he went through this same process. It's sort of seen as like an internal fumble. Your budget doesn't have to get Republican approval, so it should be really easy to get your whole team on board with just passing it. But I think that maybe one takeaway Congress should take is that the budget system might be broken if we now see Republicans and Democrats failing to get it to work. It might be time to rethink that whole process.
And briefly, Ginger, some people are seeing this as the progressive wing of the Democratic Party flexing their muscles, trying to be an equivalent role to the House Freedom Caucus on the Republican side.
It is. It is going to draw a lot of comparisons. They're not quite the same. The progressive wing of the Democratic Party is not so ideologically different from their party as the Freedom Caucus is from the Republican Party, but providing headaches for their leadership just the same.
Ginger, we'll leave it there. Thanks, as always, for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
That's Ginger Gibson, correspondent for Reuters. She was with us to talk about some of the week's top stories in national politics.